We know it's working because that number's moving. Okay. Today is June 21st, 2015. I'm Mary Manning with the Houston Arts Alliance Folklife and Traditional Arts Program. I'm in a practice space above the Continental Club in Houston, Texas, interviewing musician Roberto Rodriguez, who has kindly agreed to share his knowledge and experience being a musician who plays Tex-Mex, Conjunto Cumbia, and other styles of music.
Yes.
For the first question, I'm just going to ask you to tell me a little bit about learning how to play the accordion.
Learning how to play the accordion. It's a very unique instrument. When I came about it, I actually wanted to learn how to play guitar, and I asked my parents that I wanted music lessons. But when I was younger, we didn't have money for music lessons, so they kind of just gave me a guitar, but I never learned how to play it. And one day my dad showed up and he goes, "Hey, tomorrow you're going to have a teacher." I was like, "Cool, what am I going to learn?" He goes, "Accordion." And I'm like, "What is that?" So I really didn't know what it was. And so my teacher showed up the next day, just like my dad said, and asked me, "Have you ever played it? Have you ever tried it?" I told him no. He goes, "Okay, well, we'll start from scratch." So he put it on me and I had no idea how to work it. I just saw, it looked like a typewriter to me. That's what everybody used to tell me. And he showed me my first notes and how to handle it with the technique. And I had no idea what he was talking about. But after I held it for, I guess about an hour, that's what was. He stayed with me for 2 hours, the first practice that we ever had rehearsal. And learning it was very difficult in the beginning because I had, like I said, I didn't see a structure in it. Just like if you would sit in front of a like piano or have a guitar, you actually saw the structure of how it went. But with the accordion, there's no, the particular accordion that I play, it's a button diatonic. And so it's just like a harmonica. If you could picture somebody playing harmonica, they blow air out and suck air in, and you have two different notes. So that's exactly what a diatonic button accordion does, is when you pull the bag out, you have one note, but when you push it in, it's another note. So it took me a while to figure that out and find out the structure. But once I found the structure of it, it all became simple. So there is a structure to playing the button accordion. It's just that you have to sit down and you'll see there's various accordions that are painted differently. They have different color buttons. There is a button version of the accordion that is chromatic. And it does have buttons, and some of those actually have black and white buttons, just like a piano. So you'll know which ones are your sharps, which ones are your just regular keys. But in the button diatonic, it doesn't matter what color your buttons are, they're just there for decoration. So that was something I had to learn as well. And so once I figured that out, then it was just I started thinking just like a harmonica player. And it's the button diatonic, a three row that I perform with. I have three harmonicas in one big giant box. That's the easiest way I explain to people of how to play the diatonic accordion that I play, is having three harmonicas. And because I have three harmonicas at once, I get to do full scales, full chords, and get to play a lot of variety because of that. And then also learning the bass side. On the bass side, your bass buttons, they're also diatonic. You don't have a full range of bass. So you actually have to kind of cheat. This is, I guess, the best way to explain it. Because you don't have your full chords whenever you're trying to do your sevenths. You do have majors, but you don't have the full range of it. And so whenever you're doing some minors, you kind of have to cheat using the same major chords, which doesn't make sense in music. But as far as playing the accordion, the diatonic accordion, for us, that's the way we have to play. And you'll see that a lot, even with Cajun, Creole, Zydeco players that play the one-row button accordion, which is also diatonic, And that's having just a harmonica, just one harmonica. But they have a bass side too, and they only have in and out on the bass. It either it's just major. It doesn't matter if they're playing minors or not. So it takes a while to learn. I'd say, like, and I teach the accordion, so I've gotten to learn the instrument inside and out. And someone who hasn't, like myself, the way I started, I had no idea how to do anything on it. So I've kind of, like, I guess teaching the accordion gives me another perspective on how people view it. And I've noticed that once they learn the technique, it usually takes them about a month to get them used to holding it and playing along with it. So it's a different instrument to try to tackle, but it's enjoyable. You have so much fun trying to learn it. It gets you working a lot, gets your brain working. So
tell me more about teaching accordion.
Teaching accordion, that was never my intention at all. That fell into my lap, and that was from my teacher, who sadly he passed away about 3 years ago. But I studied under him about, I think, close to 10 years, and he was a teacher that, from his upbringing, he learned the traditional oral way of everything being passed down to him. So when he started learning, he learned, just, you know, they taught him how to play accordion, and he kind of, like, learned on his own. So he learned the music part of it. He learned on his own. He didn't really have any proper teaching. With myself, he started teaching me that way, but I wanted to actually understand how music actually worked. And I ended up just choosing to take a couple beginner music courses, music theory courses, and that opened up an entirely new door for me, because I was already learning music, but orally, but I didn't understand the function of it. So I actually took the music courses, and from there, people started asking me, "Can you teach me?" And I had never tried it before. I was like, well, okay, let's try it. But I had to, my teacher always told me that all of his students, he always taught them different because everybody learns different. So I kind of had that in the back of my mind, and I ended up starting to teach. And that was something I didn't really expect was going to do anything for me. And I guess I'm on my fifth year right now of teaching, and that's actually what I do for during the day, is teach music, teach accordion. And it's kind of rewarding, because you get to see some of the kids every week, and I have kids ranging from 5 years old all the way to about students in their 60s that are retirees. And each one is completely different, and each one learns at a different pace. But I know the same feeling that I saw through the eyes of my teacher. I understand what he felt when one of your students actually gets up on stage and starts performing, and you're the one who taught them all that, and they kind of, like, you know, they get into it, and it's very rewarding for me, and especially for the younger generation, because a lot of them, I'm trying to teach them a lot of the old songs, not just old instrumentals and older songs with lyrics that you don't hear anymore. And I started figuring that out when even some of the parents that would bring me their students, they had no idea certain songs that I would ask them about, and they just wouldn't remember. They would say, "Oh, that's probably from my mom's era or my grandfather's era." But that type of music was passed down through my teacher, and he was he was in his 60s when he was teaching me. So all of his stuff, as his childhood music, he kind of passed it on to me. So whenever I perform some of those songs, it's more the older generation that are, like, you know, that are in their 60s or 70s that still remember those, and they've never heard them in over 30 years. And that kind of brings back, well, that brings me a lot of joy, because they say that, they ask me, how'd I learn those? I'm so young and I shouldn't even know those. But I tell them, I've been listening to roots music, you know, ever since I was young, so I still remember all those songs. And now that I get know how to play them, some of the polkas and the chotises and rodobas, they're really glad that I still know those. So I'm trying to teach that to the younger generation, and trying to tell them that that's where all the music comes from, Mexican-American music that we do on accordion, that's where it comes from, that's where it all started. So I just tell them, don't forget about it and learn how to play it. And even though nobody, I know all their friends don't know it, but I tell them, at least you know it and keep playing it, because someday you're going to pass it on and you're going to tell them that's where it all comes from. That's where, everything from the traditional roots, conjunto, norteño, you'll hear all that, and that's where it comes from. So I just tell them, keep going with it and just don't let it go. Even record it down. Like, I used to, I still do this, and my teacher gave me the idea as well. After I show somebody how to the techniques and the scales and certain songs, what I do is I either ask my students to, get their smartphones out and videotape me, through video. So what I do is I go over the lesson again, but I'll have them videotape me. That way they can take that home and have that as a record. And then sometimes when they get good enough, instead of me doing it, I ask them to do it. So I record them to play, so that way they could see themselves doing what I told them to do, and that way it helps them out to remember. And if they ever forget, which I've done myself, I still have cassette tapes that I used to record on during my lessons when I was younger. I guess when I was around 15 or 16 years old, and I went back and heard them, and there's instrumental songs there that I completely forgot about. So I just started learning them again, but I'm glad I was able to record them. So that's another way of kind of helping my students remember and keep what they've learned, so they can remember, even though they forget sometimes, but they always have something documented that they could go back to. But it's very rewarding, though. I enjoy it. I didn't think I was going to enjoy it that much, but I kind of look forward every week to even meeting new students, because you always have those new students that are very eager to learn. Some of them get frustrated because they've tried to learn on their own. So whenever they have a helping hand, it kind of gives them relief, and they see the light at the end of the tunnel, and they tell themselves, oh, I can do this. Because I've had a lot of students where, even, especially my older students, that some, have jobs, have families. Some retirees, they always tell me, hey, can you teach this old dog? I don't think I'll ever learn. And when I tell them to give me 3 months, and at the end of the 3 months, they're actually performing, yeah, I get to see that smile that they have. Like, man, I would have never thought I would be playing. And I'm like, yeah, man, you can do it. It's just music. Music's fun. It's easy. So anybody can learn at whatever age, no matter how old you are. So it's very rewarding to see that with them. Mm-hmm.
Describe how your music is part of your family or community when you were growing up.
Through the music was always around. It didn't matter where we were. At home, my mom would always have the radio on while she was cooking or cleaning. And even before I could even walk, I would always hear music. But I got the best of both worlds, because my mom, she was born in Mexico. So growing up, our first language was Spanish. And of course, we heard nothing but Spanish music. So that was my first experience with listening to the accordion and the bajo sexto and all the traditional stuff. But at the same time, when my dad would barbecue and bring his friends over to the house, he grew up, he was born and raised in Houston, Texas. And so he grew up during the 70s. So during the 70s, it was nothing but rock and roll. So I had the great privilege to sit down with him and his buddies, and they would tell me the stories of how they, how they grew up, how they used to always listen to rock and roll. And they would teach me about Black Sabbath and Santana and, Deep Purple and Pink Floyd and, a lot of the old classic rock and roll. So, it was weird. Ever since I was a young kid, that's why I wanted to do music, The only thing I know about is that my dad, when he was younger, he played percussion a little bit, but, you know, just a garage band, nothing fancy, never in big bands or anything. And always wondered where music came from, as far as like where I got it from. And my grandfather, which is on my mom's dad, we've never met him. From what I understand, I think he's still alive somewhere in Mexico, but we just don't know who he is. They told my mom that he was actually a leader of an orchestra in Mexico, but we never knew who he was. Well, I don't know. My mom has never met him, and of course I haven't either, but I think that's where it trickled down to me, because I guess it passed the generation and got to me, because out of my entire family, I'm the only one that kind of got the bug and stuck with it. But by being around, you know, two different styles of music, that kind of started giving me ideas of, ooh, I could play rock and roll. I could play Mexican music at the same time as well. So that kind of rekindled a fire in me to where, first, of course, I learned Mexican music first, Mexican-American music. And then I started asking myself, well, now that I know this, how can I start implementing all the American music my dad showed me with his friends? So people always used to tell me, that was never going to happen, especially because I was playing accordion. And at the time, I mean, I didn't really, you know, I was about, around 15, 16. That's around I started playing. And back then, I didn't really know much about the, like, history of different music. So the only thing I knew was Mexican-American music and, you know, all the classic rock and roll. So people always saw the accordion as, oh, that's for Mexican music. And I didn't know any better either. So they would just start telling me, oh, you can't do English music with it. You can't do anything like that. So me being the person that I am, I'm like, yeah, you can, man. It's a music instrument. Because I started thinking about how people use guitar, how they use even harmonica and piano. Like, they play in so many different types of music. Why can't you do that with accordion? So that's what I started doing and telling people, well, I'm playing rock and roll now. So, you know, deal with it now. It's happening. But it was because of the music that I had at home. And it was always, the radio was always on. There was never a day that the radio wasn't on. And if the radio wasn't on, Spanish TV was always on. And in Spanish TV, there was always music happening through that TV as well, especially in the Spanish station. So it was always whenever they would put on a lot of the Mexican movies. The Mexican movies were the first ones where I actually saw actual Mexican bands from the northern part of the border playing just bajo sexto and accordion. And they would have the mariachis as well. So they would do the serenades in the movies, and I would see that. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. When I get a girlfriend, I could do that. So that kind of gave me the ideas of, wow, that's how it is. And especially a lot of the old Mexican movies, they're always like, always at the bar, sitting down drinking because their woman left them. And so you would see these musicians walk in, and they start playing corridos and, you know, doing all the sad songs, the drinking songs. And so I'm like, wow, I kind of saw that of how music and people listening to that, how that affects, you know, one another. So that really got me into, like, okay, I want to do this once I saw those movies. And those were the first ones where I actually saw that, where the interaction between the crowd and the musicians. And of course, because I was too young to go to, like, bars and to go see actual musicians live. And then also watching Tom and Jerry, because Tom and Jerry, that was my first experience. And it was so weird because me and my buddy Nick, who we performed together, we had kind of the same experiences where Tom and Jerry was our first introduction to jazz music. And I didn't know I was listening to jazz in the beginning, because I mean, it was just Tom and Jerry. I was watching cartoons as a little kid, but I had seen that big upright bass, and especially when they would have like the skeletons and, you know, forming a band and all that. And I still remember watching Tom and Jerry and, like, listening to all that music. And I had no idea that was jazz. It was just music for me. But I really enjoyed it, and I liked all the melodies they had. So that really sparked more of an interest of like, oh, let's stick with music. So it was music's always been around. So that's what's always kept me going for everything I've done.
Tell me about when you first started performing.
My first time performing, it was probably about 2 years after I actually started studying the accordion. And back then, the only people I knew that played music were the professionals. And luckily, my father, we had made friends with a couple of Mexican-American artists, one being the Hometown Boys, and also my teacher, of course. My teacher was part of a very famous Tejano group, Roberto Pulido y Los Clásicos, and we were friends. Of course, we became friends with them because he was my teacher, so I got to meet all of them. And both of those groups were pretty much my foundation to start performing. One, because my teacher taught me, and everybody in the music world, they knew my teacher as a master accordionist of Tejano music. And he was considered to be one of the best within the music community, even though he wasn't well known. You know, of course, fans knew him, but as far as being a musician, he was the musician to look at, to go after. I would study with him, but I would spend more time with the Hometown Boys. They were out of Lubbock, and so every time they would come to town, I'd go over there and just mess around with the accordion player, and I'd tell him to show me tricks. And one day, they used to come over to the house and kind of have coffee with us or eat. And one day their father, who pretty much was like the leader of the group, he asked me to play something at the house, and I did. He goes, "Do you know all of our stuff?" I'm like, "Yeah, I studied y'all." I and by then I was about 16 years old. And I was sneaking into the Spanish clubs with my parents. I guess not sneaking in, but I was able to go with them because I was with my parents. But after a year or so of watching them perform, I studied all their stage performance. They used to have hand signs whenever they would move over to certain songs. And so I studied all those hand signs and I learned them all. And because the Hometown Boys was like my favorite group. So I learned all their stuff. And so after the dad finally heard me, he goes, "Bring your accordion tonight." I'm like, "Really?" And that was the first time he had ever asked. Because, I mean, I wasn't going to ask. I knew, you know, but I was just too embarrassed and I was too afraid. But he goes, "I'll put you up on stage tonight." I'm like, "Really?" So my eyes lit up and so nervous, had butterflies in my stomach. And I was excited because I was going to play with my favorite band. And that's all I wanted to do. I wanted to be a part of that band. That was like my dream. I'm like, I want to be part of the Hometown Boys. That was my dream. So that night, where were we at? It's not around anymore, but it used to be called El Casino, off of Wayside and I-10. And they got me up on stage, and I thought I was going to perform one song. Well, the singer, Ricky, who sadly passed away as well, I remember him telling me, he goes, "You ready for this?" I was like, "Yeah." So they started playing, and I remember starting off the song. And at the end of the song, I was looking at him to kind of give me the cue, okay, we're going to end. Well, he just gave me this grin and looked at me from the corner of his eye, gave me the grin, and I'm like, "Oh no, oh no." And he gave the hand sign to the rest of the group. And luckily, I knew what the hand sign meant. We were changing into another song, but we were changing from one key to another key, which is very, well, you know, even their transitions, I studied them and I learned them. And I was so nervous. I was looking around for the accordion player, and I saw him down below the stage, and I kind of waved at him. I'm like, "Man, come over here and save me. Hurry." And he looked at me. He had a beer in his hand. He pulled, pulled the beer up and kind of said cheers and just walked away. And I'm like, oh no, oh no. And they started another song, and luckily I was so nervous, but I still was able to perform to all. And I ended up playing for 40 minutes, my very first time on stage. And man, was I shaking when I got done. I was laughing because I was with, it was laughter of nerves. I mean, I couldn't do anything else, but I was shaking. So when we got done with the set, the singer came to me and, you know, I hugged him. I hugged everybody and told him thank you. And the singer goes, you wanted to be a musician? Welcome to the life. He goes, there is no either. He told me, you're either going to do it or you're not. And this was your test. He goes, you were thrown in the fire. And that's what a real musician has to go through. There is no, you know, there's no second chances. So he goes, if you would have screwed up, you would have screwed up. But you kept going and you took it like a real musician. And he goes, welcome to the club. And so that, I'll never forget that night where it was, my heart was pounding, you know. And the best feeling I had was, I guess, you know, all the crowd gave me so much applause because I was so young. And a lot of them were very surprised that I was able to handle the stress and handle the amount of playing time that we did, about 40 minutes, which, you know, to somebody new, somebody to getting up on stage just the first time, like, you don't think about that. You want to play one song and get off. But no, I had played, like, I played their entire, one, well, almost their entire second set. And everybody gave me a pat on the back, so I felt very proud. And for them to give me the okay, being the hometown boys to give me the okay, I was like, oh, I made it. I made it now. So that was, like, an experience where that always stuck with me. So that experience has never left, and it humbled me very much because of the way they treated me. They didn't treat me like a kid, even though I was a kid back then. They treated me as a fellow musician. So they were like, if this is what you're gonna do, this is what you're gonna have to go through, and you're gonna probably go through this pretty much for as long as you're playing, because people might invite you to get up on stage. And they're like, just be ready for it. Always be ready. That was the number one thing. Always be ready for anything. So that's what kind of, it kept me pushing on learning not just the instrument itself, but just music in general. So, and I'm still learning music. I haven't stopped. I learn from everybody. Every single musician I've ever met, it doesn't matter whether they're horn players, you know, guitar players, any string instrument, you know, violin players, piano players, even drummers. I ask them questions of certain techniques they do, and then I try to mimic them on the accordion and see what I could come out with. But that kind of keeps me on my toes, because I have performed with a lot of people, and I've gotten on stage with people I've never met. Don't know their playing style. Just don't know anything. They'll just tell me, hey, get your accordion, come up. They tell me what key they're in, and I just follow them. But that all started from that day when I got up for the first time playing with the hometown boys. And I'll never forget that. Never forget that. So that was an experience.
Tell me about some of the first bands you played with.
My very first band, actual band, was Los Carnales out of Houston, Texas. And I joined them because I met one of my best friends in the world, and I consider him my brother, Nick Gaitan. We met in college at the University of Houston at the Mexican American Lounge. And I had an AC/DC shirt. And he saw that. He goes, hey, pretty cool, man. You like rock and roll? I'm like, yeah, I like rock and roll. And then he found out I played accordion. He goes, what? You play accordion, but you like rock? I was like, yeah, man. He goes, will you be interested in joining a ska punk group? I was like, you know, we sing in Spanish. I'm like, what is that? I didn't know at the time what, you know, ska music was. I had heard about punk, but I was like, you know, I wasn't really into the music because I just grew up with Mexican-American music around me and old classic rock and roll. But then he started telling me about what ska and reggae was. And I'm like, oh, like Bob Marley. I did hear about him, but he goes, but this is ska, man. This is like before reggae. And, you know, and then he was like, you ever heard of Toots and the Maytals? I'm like, no. So he started giving me all these records and all this music, and I just started listening to it and listening to Mambo. And then I met the singer Felipe Galvan, and he was a character. Joining that group was they pretty much filled my brain with every sort of genre of music you could think of. They're the ones who schooled me in like what was the real punk, you know, the old roots of country, honky tonk, blues, like roots rock and roll with Chuck Berry, and you know, listen to that, and you know, then they just fed me anything and everything they could, and they just told me, now play the accordion over that. I'm like, what? What am I supposed to do with this? I don't know how to do any of this. And they were like, well, we got to figure it out. So Scarnales was my training camp, was my boot camp to going into all sorts of genres. And without Scarnales, that would have never, I wouldn't be where I am today. But every single musician at that time, because at that time, I think I was like the 32nd member or something like that. I'm not sure, but they had already gone through so many lineup changes. And the lineup that I joined was a Pachuco Boogie Sound System lineup. That's what we called it. We had drums, upright bass, organ, guitar, and accordion. So it was only six of us. And, of course, Felipe singing. My first shows with them, I had no idea. I was pretty much like just deer in headlights. I was so used to playing Mex-American clubs, you know, seeing people dance on the dance floor, having a good time. Well, I didn't know that the good time that kids have over here with us, especially with Scarnales, because they were already established when I joined them. That was my first time I ever saw a mosh pit happen. And I'm like, why are you hitting each other? But I didn't really understand, you know, the culture, because it's just, I never grew up with that. But they taught me, you know, that's what our shows are all about. We just have fun, you know, drink, and, you know, we play music for people and they're happy. So that was very, that was like, it was just mind-boggling. But my years of Scarnales were some of the best that I've ever had, because they taught me what it was to know how to tour. You know, like touring with them at the time, we didn't have no money. You know, we slept in cars. At one point I slept in someone's front lawn before. You know, I would sometimes, when I would be in somebody that would just kind of invite us like to their house, and we're like, hey, can we stay here? They're like, yeah, sure. I would find like a table or a desk, and I just like crawl under there. That way I wouldn't get stepped on while the party was going on. And I just fall asleep there. But they're the ones who taught me how to tour, taught me about just different genres of music and what it was to actually have, like, be in my own band. You know, I had a set of brothers that, you know, we went around the country together and performed. And after we went our separate ways, I stuck with Nick Aitan, and he formed Nick Aitan and the Umbrella Man. And he had told me that when we had went our separate ways at that time, I went back to school because I had left the university and I didn't think I was going to go back. But when we went our separate ways from Scarnales, I decided to go back to school and get my degree. And Nick was doing Umbrella Man, but he was doing it like more kind of like jazz. And for him, it was just going to be like a little, you know, just side project, and he just wanted to do jazz. I'm like, all right, cool. But then soon after, he called me back, and he goes, hey, man, you want to keep jamming together? I'm like, yeah, man, let's do it. So we kept he kept the name, and we started performing together again, and we started coming up with new music. Because I had that background of Mexican-American music, he goes, hey, man, you want to do sing some of the Spanish tunes that you do that are traditional? I'm like, yeah, sure. He goes, and he started writing his own music. So we started mixing and matching, doing Tex-Mex Conjunto with his original music. And then I started writing original music. So it just started growing from then. And Ligaitan and the Umbrella Man, that is the band where, you know, since both me and Nick were in Scarnales, we learned all our craft there. So Ligaitan and the Umbrella Man was the point of where, okay, now we're growing up now. So we have to change what direction we want to go to. So that's where we started kind of coming into our own, finding out what we want to play, how we want to play it, and doing it our way. You know, we both of us have performed with different groups, even with Umbrella Man. And even to this day, I'm still, that's Umbrella Man. I think Nick started in 05 or 06, somewhere around there. And we're still with Umbrella Man. But during that time, I also made my own band called Pistoleros de Texas. And just this past year, December of 2014, I decided to kind of cancel that band out because I did have it for about close to 6-7 years. And in that group, that was my own group. So that was my very first group that I had on my own and was the lead singer of. I did more traditional Tex-Mex. I did a little bit of country. But it just, you know, it started fizzing out because of some of my band members. I lost a few of them, you know, just because life happened. So they're going their own ways. So me and the drummer, Rajiv Grover, we stuck together. And I just recently formed another band that I have called Pulpo, which is Spanish for octopus. And now I'm transitioning to another sound. We're still doing Tex-Mex, but we're kind of getting more punk in there. And we're still trying to form the sound, but it's getting there. But, yeah, out of all the bands, I've only been in, well, now this is my fourth one, but we've been together for quite a number of years. So, and then throughout the years, I've also performed with bands from Los Angeles, Tremoloco. I would perform with Sisters Morales out of San Antonio. And in 2014, the summer of 2014, after going on a two-month trip to Canada with Tremoloco from LA, I came back to a phone call, and I actually performed with Los Lobos for 3 days. They called me because they needed an accordion player that could play rock and roll and traditional Mexican music. And David Hidalgo, who was their leader, or, you know, their main singer and accordion player, I think he had surgery or something. He couldn't go on the tour to finish off the tour. So I got called up, and I was able to perform with Lobos for 3 days. I did Louisville, Colorado, then Reno, Nevada, and Sun Valley, Idaho. I did 3 shows with them. That was, till now, that's been my biggest show that I've ever done, is being up there with Los Lobos. Because I, you know, we've been able to party with like Tex Tornadoes and Flaco and all that. You know, some of my idols instead of Augie Myers. But to be able to perform with Los Lobos, that was something I never thought was going to happen ever. And to get the phone call, I thought it was a joke. But no, it surely happened. So I've had the pleasure of performing with a lot of groups and also a lot of great musicians. You know, I was able to record an album with Dave Alvin out of everybody, with Tremoloco, you know, so it's been good, you know, meeting all these musicians on the road and finding out that they know my friends back home. So it's just such a small world, it's a small community of musicians that it's great to meet all these guys. And especially some of them who are my idols, getting able to perform alongside them, sharing the stage with them, you know, and then being able to drink with them. So those have been great, great experiences throughout my life.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about all the different genres or styles of music that you play or perform.
Well, I think I've dabbled into everything you could think of. The main thing that I still do is I still do traditional Tex-Mex. I'll do norteño. I'll do conjunto. Then I'll mix it up with a bit of honky-tonk. I'll play blues. I've done rock and roll. We've played like metal. I've done Ace of Spades, you know, for Motorhead, and that's another great group I love that I grew up listening to. And you know, we've played some Pink Floyd. I've done that on accordion. Let's see. Well, of course, ska reggae. I've done a lot of that. Ska reggae has kind of been like, that was the first type of genre that actually came after the Mexican-American music, was ska reggae, because of ska nales. And being able to you know, share the stage with Toots and the Maytals finally, after years and years of listening to him, and finally got to meet him, I'm like, oh wow, it's him. And you know, so the ska reggae thing, that was great. I still love that music, and we try to perform that every once in a while. I recorded a couple tracks for different people for hip hop. That was kind of weird for me to do an accordion, but I ended up doing it somehow. I've done one. I remember doing a commercial for Fiesta, and they wanted accordion, but the music was not Mexican American. I remember they told me the plot of the commercial, and it was supposed to be a genie coming out of a bottle. So they wanted, I don't know what you might call it, but it was some type of Middle Eastern melody is what they had. So I had to learn that and perform it on accordion, but it was in Mexican. It was a Middle Eastern like type thing. And I learned how to do that. And while I was doing that, that got me interested in those sounds, you know, from the Middle East. So I started listening to music like gypsy jazz, and that I still can't do. I've been wanting to try it. I've performed bluegrass before. What else? Jazz, they have some of my friends that actually study jazz have been trying to teach me, but that's something where I'm still trying with that. That's still like, it's not too much. I haven't gotten to that. Well, myself, I haven't gotten to that level, I think, is to perform jazz. But pretty much like every genre that you could think of, I've tried to dabble into it, and I tried to put it into the accordion and everything we do. Like, I take away. When I dabble into music like that, I learn, you know, certain scales that people use. And what I'll do is I'll take those, I'll try to see if it fits with a particular, like sometimes we'll, like right now, I'm trying to mix in cumbias with punk rock. And we've been performing those when we do a cumbia. And my drummer, he didn't grow up listening to Mexican American music. He's a punk rock drummer, just straight up punk rock. That's what he grew up. That's what he played. So to try to teach him what a cumbia was, a cumbia rhythm, I just showed it to him just different songs. But he never actually learned the actual rhythm, the beat, or the way you're supposed to play the drums on it. And people, other drummers that know how to play that, they have told him before, and he's kind of gotten weirded out about it because he doesn't know. Like, he goes, "Am I doing it wrong?" I'm like, "Actually, no. I don't want you to play like traditional. I want you to play like you," and that's what I like doing now with him. Since he's not a traditional cumbia player, he plays his cumbias the way he feels them, and then in the middle of them, when we're doing solos, I tell him to play punk rock. And so we switch it to punk rock, and people are still dancing to it, and they even get more excited because they start hearing the punk rock rhythm, and they just freak out because they're like, "Weren't we just listening to a cumbia?" I'm like, "Yeah, y'all were." But then we go back to a, you know, what you could call a cumbia rhythm, and we just finish it as a cumbia rhythm, and people kind of look at us like, "What the hell did y'all just do?" Like, you know, but it's kind of fun. Like, it's what keeps me going. Is like I never ever want to back down from any genre. Like, I always want, like, if there's a genre that somebody tells me, "Hey, try it," I'll try it. Because of the very first time when people told me that I was never able to do, like, you know, playing accordion to use it in American music. And so that fire has never died out. I always want to do something bigger and better and see what else I could do. And because, I mean, it's such a versatile instrument, learning about the history of the accordion and everywhere that you could find it around the world. It's like, it's based on all folk music. So I'm like, wow, you could do so much with this. And that's what makes it a unique instrument to myself. And, you know, I dabble with guitar and I dabble a little bit with, I'm not too good with piano, but I can sit down and kind of take out a tune. But I really enjoy the accordion because it gives me so much versatility that I can just go anywhere with it. And it's such a small instrument that I can carry around anywhere I go. And if somebody wants to jam, I just take it out and start jamming no matter what type of music they have. So I really enjoy every type of music from all over the world. I listen to world music, and I remember being in school I took world music because I wanted to learn about different music. And when I found out about Mongolian throat singing, that was fascinating to me. I'm like, wow, these guys are, you know, doing all that stuff with just their throat. Like, they're making melodies, and, you know, that was just amazing to me. And so, like, I really enjoy finding new stuff like that, especially with folk or anything like that, because you just never know. All that stuff, you can make it yours, you know. So I, learning about stuff like that, it's very, very, like, it keeps me going. I enjoy it so much. But yeah, it's great though. It's great just listening to anything and everything. You know, even salsa and cumbia, the you know, Cuban music and salsa. Salsa is kind of hard for me. I haven't really tried much with the salsa stuff, but I know back in the early days when merengue was starting to come up, they used to use the accordion. But I listened to some of those older recordings, but they play so fast. I'm not used to that right now at all. Like, I can't keep up with them. They have a different, their technique is so different from what I know. So I actually have to sit down and, like, from scratch and try to learn it. And that's what I'm actually doing right now, but learning zydeco. I'm trying to learn zydeco, but I have to learn from scratch because since I've been listening to it for many years, but the technique that they use is different from what I perform. So I have to sit down just like anybody else and start from scratch and learn their technique. So I'm trying to do that. So that's like my next goal, is to try to learn zydeco and play it. But I'm trying. I'm trying there.
Tell me about tell me more about audiences' reactions to when you mix a more traditional Mexican-American style with maybe a different type of genre.
I get mixed reactions from the crowd. A lot of the older folks that are more traditionalist, I guess, I don't know if they're afraid of change, but they don't like it when something does change. Just recently, not too long ago, about a couple weeks ago, I performed at the at Discovery Green here in Houston. And I was opening up for a Tejano legend, David Lee Garza, who, of course, I've grown up with, and he was a very good friend of my teacher. And, I mean, he is traditional Tejano, what you consider Tejano, like, back in the heyday in the late 80s, early 90s. He is, and still considered, one of the best Tejano groups that has ever been around. We perform as Pulpo, and I haven't been playing for a Tejano crowd in a while. Right now, I guess my audience is pretty much, you have people that have been coming into Houston that don't know anything about Tex-Mex, they don't know anything about Mexican-American music, so to them, being able to hear it is a joy for them. But I perform weekly, and everywhere I perform, I do have some Mexican-Americans in the audience, but then I have, you know, whites, we have blacks, we have Asians. Like, they come from all over, so we just mix up the music, and for us, it's normal. we'll do punk, we'll do country, we'll do rock and roll, we'll play Tex-Mex, we'll do cumbias. So we mix it all up, and the crowd reaction is great because I start seeing people like of all sorts of color and cultures. The great thing when we're performing is that they'll just grab somebody and just start dancing, which in the Mexican-American community, you don't really see that much because it's just, you're just dancing with your significant other, or you're trying to find a lady to dance with and trying to, you know, make her your significant other. So that's what you see a lot of the Mexican-American dances. So you don't really see too much of mixing. But over here, when I get to play with Pulpo at certain locations in Houston, I have a mix of everybody. So it don't matter where you're from. You just get up and dance. It don't matter, you know, if you know how to dance or not. You learn how to dance, or somebody teaches you. And I really enjoy that because they give me a lot of feedback, and they kind of tell me, like, oh, man, I'm doing something good. Because I'll perform at the Big Top. I'll go to Voodoo Queen, which is a bar. And there's two different locations that we play at weekly. And each one has two different types of crowd. But both of them are very great. They clap for us. They holler. You know, it's a drinking crowd. You know, they want to have a good time. But when I performed finally, it had been about, I want to say, a good like 7 years that I performed in front of an actual Tejano crowd. So opening up for David Ligarza, I started doing a lot of my original songs, which, you know, of course, I'm singing in Spanish, but I'm also singing in English. But I'm not doing traditional rhythms, even though I have the accordion. And it wasn't until toward the end of our set where I kind of like a light bulb kind of turned on in my head. I'm like, oh, I only saw maybe like two couples dancing. And all I saw, I mean, the crowd, I think they had like, from what they told me, like close to 5,000 people there that day. So I had, you know, these thousands of people in front of me, and they were just kind of just staring at me, like sitting down, staring. Like, I mean, they were clapping, you know, I guess they enjoyed it, but it wasn't the reaction I was hoping for. And so I turned around to my guys. I'm like, hey, man, I know I told y'all we weren't going to do this, but let's play a polka. And so I started performing a polka. Well, that changed the audience's reaction. That's when the hooting and hollering started happening, and I saw more people started getting up and dance. And I completely forgot. I have to, you know, I was like, well, I got to play for the crowd. You know, I was trying to, at the same time, I was trying to show my music that I have, my original music, which, you know, which it's new, and a lot of people, of course, haven't heard it, but it's a new type of style that I'm trying to do, trying to get it out there. And after the polka, we played a traditional Mexican-American song called Puño de Tierra, and it's another drinking song, you know, so like, same thing. Had the same reaction. Everybody's, you know, happy, drinking, dancing. And then I ended the show with a cumbia, and they enjoyed the cumbias. And so when we got off, someone came up to me, and an older gentleman, he goes, I thought y'all guys were going to be Tejano. I'm like, why did you think that? I'm like, because David Ligarza's here. I'm like, yeah, David Ligarza's Tejano. I'm not Tejano. He goes, well, why aren't y'all Tejano? I'm like, because we don't want to do Tejano. We're trying to do something else. And I'm like, and if you notice up on stage, I think there was only one other Mexican-American besides me, which is my buddy that was on Timbales and Congas, Paul Ramirez. And I told him, I'm like, you see my band? I'm like, they're not Tejano. They're not Mexican-American. They don't know Tejano. I have an Indian guy that plays drums, Rajiv Grover. I have Conrad Lemos, who's, I think he's half Mexican-American and half Greek, I want to say. I think. And then I have a white guy playing steel from Lafayette, Louisiana. So I tell him, I'm like, we're not Tejano. We're, you know, we're Tejano because we're from Texas. You know, that's where we're from, but we'll do Tex-Mex. But I had a little conversation with him, and he goes, yeah, y'all should play traditional Tejano. Y'all should keep it going. I'm like, we are keeping it going. I still do traditional songs, but I want to get away from that because that, I'm like, it's, times have changed. You know, like, there's this real big debate right now with the Hano music, especially with the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. They had a big debate with that, but it's very hard to try to talk to your own, you know, your own culture and tell them, hey, the reason why there's no Tejano in Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo is because nobody wants to pay for tickets. If you get... That's why I don't play Tejano. Like, I got away from playing Conjunto at Tejano music because nobody wants to pay me to perform. And I can't make a living off that. Like, everybody wants a... I've had a lot of bar owners. And, of course, Tejano has been getting smaller and smaller because there's no radio play or nothing like that. But I try to tell the people that it's the own people's fault. Y'all guys don't support it. You say you do, but whenever there's a show happening, you start crying about, oh, I got to pay $5. Yeah, you're paying $5 to go see five bands, man. That's a deal, you know? So whenever, you know, if David Ligarza would come into town, you know, he might charge $10-$15 at the door, which is not a lot. There's Norteño groups, you know, that you go see, Los Cadetes de Linares or Ramon Ayala. People are, they're charging $50 at the door, and people pay that to go see them. And they're Norteño, of course. It's like a different genre, like different style, but people go pay that. That's why they're still around. That's why they still sell records. You tell people that want to hear Tejano, hey, go pay $20 to go see this band. Oh, that's too much. I don't want to go see them now. But I heard people like at Discovery Green, they're like, oh, look, you see all these Tejanos, they all come out to support. I'm like, yeah, because this is a free show. I'm like, if we had 5,000, all these 5,000 people, if they paid for a show, then Tejano would be big. But you're coming out for a free show, so that doesn't count, you know? Like, where were you at when I was trying to do Tejano? I'm charging $5 at the door, but that's too much for you, so, you know, you don't want to come. Or bar owners, oh, come out here just for promotion. Well, I don't need promotion. I already have plenty of promotion. I need you to pay me so I could go perform. I'm performing, you know, a service to you. So that's what I think is wrong with some of the people that are kind of like, you know, irritated that they don't want change, but change is happening, and they don't want to see it. I had conversations with people about the Houston Livestock Show. I'm not mad at them. Even though I grew up listening to Tejano, I'm not mad. They're bringing in groups that are going to fill in seats and put money in their pocket. That's what it is. It's all about money. You have bands, you know, bandas. With bandas, like, you know, it's Mexican music, but it's Mexican music from, like, the west side of the west coast. You know, that's big bandas. You have the big orchestras and all that. We don't really listen to that. Well, I don't never really listen to that here. But I always tell people that times have changed here in Houston. There's been a big migration of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans from the West Coast. They're bringing in their music. Well, it's their music. They're paying for it. So that's why you hear so much of that music now, banda music, and like the, you know, the you have more ranchera music, but with banda. And then now there's a mixture of the accordion with banda. So, like, that's a big deal right now. But to the Tejanos and Norteños, they don't, that listen to Tejano and Norteño, they don't like that style of music. But I'm like, well, you're the ones that have to do the change. I'm like, go spend money on the records, go to the shows, you know, go support the local acts that are doing it. I have a lot of friends that still do Conjunto, but they only play in a certain, like, there's a circle that they're in, and they never get out of that. And I'm like, dude, don't you get tired of playing for, and there's nothing wrong with that. All their friends and all their families are the ones that go see them. And we're like, that is great, but wouldn't you want to take your music out to an entirely new world where nobody knows about Conjunto? Why don't you show somebody over here, like, you know, come to downtown, come try a show where they'll actually pay you to perform because you're performing service, and where they play at, it's their own little circle, and they don't want to get out of that. Because of the same thing, I've talked to some musicians that are recording players, and I'm like, hey, man, why don't you try to do rock and roll? You want to try to do honky-tonk? No, it's not my thing. Like, Conjunto's my thing. I don't want to change. Well, that's the problem right there. It's like, you don't want to change. It's not saying, like, I'm taking away from your roots. Like, I love my roots. I know where I come from. I know where I started from. I never forget it. I still perform that style of music. And I'm pretty much like, depending on what type of show they hire us for, because I've been hired to perform for private events, for galas, for private, like corporate parties, you know, then festivals, and of course, live venues. But the live venues, festivals, those are where I could, I expand my type of music. And because there's people from everywhere, they enjoy it. But whenever they call me, hey, I just want to do Tejano, I just want Tejano music, fine, I'll go perform that for them because that's what they want. So I'll perform for the crowd. That's what I do, is like whatever crowd there is, if I see that it's majority Mexican-American or of Mexican descent, then fine, I'll do the polkas, I'll do the corridos, I'll do the, you know, rancheras, and they love it. That's all they want to hear. They don't want to hear anything else, which is fine. But I don't get why people try to kind of keep us down and tell us, hey, why don't you just play Tejano? I'm like, why am I going to do that? That's like, that's, you know, that's like just pulling me back down. You know, like, it, wouldn't it be better that you would see some, a Mexican-American accordion player going out and playing stadiums? You know, why don't they have that? Because, see, my, everybody, well, musicians that I know, all of our dreams ever since we were kids is playing in a stadium. That's what we want. But nobody wants to put in the work or the effort to get to that point. You know, like the biggest places I've played at were with Los Lobos, you know, in front of like thousands of people and big open arenas and stuff like that. So that was my experience. Like, man, see, if these guys could do it, I could do it too. They're Mexican American, you know. They're still playing rock and roll, but look what's happened. They're playing rock and roll. They're playing traditional Mexican music, and I'm like, that's what I'm trying to do. You know, just a different, you know, different style, but it's the same thing. I'm trying to do that. And, but there's people that just, that I have reactions with, that they don't want me to do that. They want me to, no, you're playing accordion, you should stay with traditional Mexican music. I'm like, you know, the accordion is not Mexican, right? And I there's a big conversation with that. Like, we got it from, you know, from Europe. That's where it comes from. Like, so it's not Mexican, so I can do whatever I want with it. And I'm like, all the mariachis that everybody considers Mexican, like true Mexican, is mariachi. I'm like, mariachi is not even Mexican either. I like, think about it. The horns, string instruments, not ours. The only indigenous thing we probably have from Mexico is a drum. And everybody's had drums, right? So, like, you know, the tambora, that's what we called it. So I tell them, like, all the music you consider Mexican is not Mexican. We got it from somewhere else. So that right there kind of gets them into another, that you know, into another realm where I'm like, oh man, I probably shouldn't have told them that, because now they're going to argue with me about, oh no, this is real Mexican. I'm like, no, like, I've actually studied it. Like, there's, you go back and it's recorded where we, you know, we got that from Europe. You know, string instruments, somewhere from Spain. We don't know where it came from. Like, it's string instruments, guitars, you know, we use them for Mexican-American music, but they're not ours. We just kind of, you know, all the stuff we do, the polka, you know, polka, redoba, the waltz, you know, the shotis, that's all Europe music, European music. So I tell them, like, man, we made it our own. You know, when you could tell the difference between a European polka and a Mexican polka. You can tell the difference, but they're one and the same. They're just played at different speeds, different levels. So I just tell people, I'm like, man, it's you'll probably always have the traditionalists where they will not want to change at all, but they're the only ones that are very annoyed that they can't hear what they want to hear, but at the same time they just don't want to support. So you know, I get into a few arguments with some folks, and I just try to tell them, this is what I do now. Like, you know, you should be happy that we're trying to better ourselves. And not just that, like, people that tell me, you know, play Norteño, play Tejano, I'm like, I am. I'm actually playing that for other people that don't know what that is. So I'm actually trying to expand that music to other cultures, to other people that have no idea what, you know, where that comes from. So I still show them, even at my shows. Like, there could be a crowd of nothing but English speakers, but I still sing in Spanish. And a lot of people ask me, man, that's a great song, what is it about? So I tell them the story behind the songs, of you know of what are the lyrics about, you know, because even though they don't understand Spanish, a lot of them understand the feeling of the music. There's some songs where you could tell the singer is singing with so much heart that they was like, "Is that a drinking song? Is that a sad song?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's a sad song. It's a, you know, broken heart song." Oh, they're like, "Oh, cool, okay." But then you have songs that I do in Spanish that are, they're upbeat, they're happy, and they're like, "Oh, that's, is that a drinking song?" I'm like, "Yeah, but it's a happy drinking song." You have sad drinking songs and happy drinking songs, so they understand it. So that's what I tell people that try to keep me down. I was like, I'm showing the world like what our great music is, what Mexican American music is, and how great it is. So, you know, like, let me do my thing, and I'll be able to show everybody else. You know, not just you guys. You guys already know about it. Now let everybody else have a taste of it. You know, and that's what I always. Whenever I run into people that don't want change, that I have a big conversation with them and tell them, just enjoy it. Enjoy that other people are enjoying it as well. And, you know, you might see somebody that is not of Mexican origin that are playing Tejano. You know, I have friends that are white guys that love Tejano music and love conjunto music. They don't understand what it's saying, but they're like, "I love the accordion sound." I'm like, "Great. Keep on playing it, man." You know, and I just tell people, let everybody else hear this and feel what you feel whenever you see it. Like, I know it's a cultural thing where we grew up with it, but that's what you know, that's a great thing, is like, show your culture to someone else so they can understand what it's about. You know, if you want people like that, I think that's what we all need, is learning about different cultures. Because if you, I mean, your culture is your culture, you know about it, you grew up with it. But go learn something. Go learn the Zydeco culture. Go learn the Creole culture. Go learn the Honky Tonk culture. And then you'll understand why people are the way they are. You know, like, you know, everybody has their own culture. Like, everybody makes, we all use some of the same spices, but we use them differently in food. You know, like, some people like crawfish, other people don't. Well, same thing if you tell people menudo, oh, we have pig's feet in there. Well, some people don't like that. You know, so I'm like, go learn about different cultures, and you'll enjoy the culture, the music, and the people. You know, that's what it's all about for me, and that's like my most important thing for me, is being able to show my culture to everybody else, but also for them to teach me their culture. You know, so it's a give and take, and that's the type of audience that I want to perform in front of, where I meet somebody and they tell me, "Man, your music's great. I never heard anything like it. What are you talking about here in the Spanish stuff?" And then they'll tell me, "Oh, this is what the type of music." Like, you know, I've had people from like Istanbul that I've met, and they've shown me their music, and I'm like, I have no idea what they're saying, but I love the music, and I want to hear more about it, more and more. So that's what I like. I like the give and take that the audience gives me, and then of course, you know, we do run into the traditionalists here and there, but you know that. That just, I don't think you'll ever change their mind, unless they want to. Like, unless someone wants to change their mind, that's the only way that the times are going to change for them. But if not, they're just going to stay stuck in the past, pretty much, you know. And that's what's kind of sad, is that they don't want to see the change that's happening. I mean, it's happening. There's can't go backwards. You just got to go forward. So yeah, it's been a ride.
Tell me more about what people mean when they say Tejano, and how maybe different styles of music fit into that, like Tex-Mex and conjunto or norteño, and maybe some of the differences, like, between.
Yeah, there's subtle differences, like in when Mexican American music just started. We all, of course, before the accordion, we had like the violin, the trumpet, the sax, and the guitars. And it was still the same music. You know, we had the rancheras. You know, it was like rancheras, corridos. Those were just stories that people would, you know. Now, of course, it would be about love. It would be about heartbreak. It would be about drinking. And then you have the corridos, which were stories about what would happen, you know, during the revolution, during, you know, times when Texas Rangers were, you know, killing off Mexican immigrants. Like, you know, just stories. But when the accordion came into play, If you hear some of the very early recordings, you really can't tell which is which. You have Santiago Jimenez Sr., which is Flaco Jimenez's father, who's one of the pioneers. You have Narciso Martinez. And when they're playing polkas, when they're playing waltzes, when they're playing redovas, it still sounds a lot like European music. And this is before they had the bajo sexto or bajo quinto. They were still using whatever instruments they could come across. You know, so they might probably have a violin or a guitar accompanying the accordion. But when it started developing, it just kind of progressed. A lot of the polkas started getting slower. Because most in the northern part, the polkas, you hop to them. And those are like the European-style polkas and stuff, the Czech polkas, Polish polkas, like you hop to them. But down here in Texas, because it's so hot, hopping would make you sweat too much. So, and what musicians did, they slowed down the beat, slowed down the tempo, and they made the what they call taquachito, which is the possum dance, because you just slide, you glide along the dance floor when you're doing that. You had your pioneers, you had like Alegre Terán, who were considered the father of norteño music, and during that era, like in the 40s, you know, and going into the 50s, everything sounded the same. There was no Tejano, there was no Norteño, there was no Conjunto, it was just Mexican-American music. Well, and this is like because of the history that we have, this is another part where I try to explain to people that are considered traditionalists, I'm like, during that time, they went through change. You know, you had, I'm pretty sure some people that were used to playing the polkas the way the Europeans played didn't want it to slow down. I'm pretty sure they had their traditionalists as well. Well, you have Mexicans on the Mexican side of the border and then Mexicans on the Texas side of the border. The big debate, where did the music come from? Some say it started in Texas, some say it's in Mexico. Who cares? It's the same music. We play with the same instruments. We all started off the same way. You start seeing, which I guess conjunto is what, like, conjunto is just a Spanish term for group, but conjunto became a genre where you had that style of polka where they played it a little bit slower, you know, taquachito, so it's slow, you know, you glide, so the tempo is very slow, it's slower, but it's still danceable. Well, on the Mexican side of the border, the Mexico side, you had people still performing with the accordion, doing same polkas, same rancheras, but they kept them a little bit upbeat. You know, they considered, that's why they call it norteño, because it's northern part of Mexico. That's norteño. So, and then, of course, they developed their own style of playing, such as like South Texas did. Then you have conjunto norteño. Then, and there's subtleties, like the way you play the cumbias. You have the Texas side, the way they play their cumbias. You have the Mexican side, the way they play their cumbias. So there's a distinction, and you could hear it, but it's still the same music. They play the same songs, just in a different, you know, a different way. They're still using accordion. When the bajo sexto came along, that pretty much became the brother to the accordion. So that from then on, conjunto and norteño music always had bajo sexto and accordion. And of course, the style of playing is a little bit different. You have, on the Texas side, you have more of the flashier guys that are, you know, the playing. Because over here in Texas, in South Texas, you have the honky-tonk. You have the rock and roll. And I'm not saying that they don't have that in Mexico, but like we have more of other musicians out here that do perform that alongside with conjunto artists. So you start seeing accordion players and bajo players trying to do that style with accordions, but norteños kind of stayed with the same structure. They didn't really deviate from that. So you have the norteño music conjunto. Well, come the Tejano era, which is it's big band era. This is when, you know, they've had big bands, you know, from the 40s and all that, even when the conjuntos were coming up. But this is a big band era where you have like the jazz band, the big orchestras, the horns and stuff. So people decide, you know, let's mix that up with with the accordion. But then they decided to get rid of the accordion and start adding synthesizers in the, like in the late 80s. And, you know, you hear a lot of like Mas and, you know, Jay Perez, all that stuff, like all those Tejano artists. They didn't really have accordion. They did start bringing it in here and there, but the majority was like the big band sound. You know, they had the horns, they had the, you know, they would play like jazz music over rancheras, which is like, you know, and these, the guys that were playing Tejano were more of the musicians who actually studied music. So they started getting into more complicated rhythms, started adding jazz and rock and roll, like, you know, to the songs and then the big band sound. And so there goes the difference between, that's why you have Conjunto Tejano Norteño. But when you really look at it, a lot of, like throughout the whole picture of it, they're all singing the same songs, they're all playing the same polkas, just in different styles. So I always tell people, like, why are you mad? Why do you say you don't like Norteño if the song that you heard over here in Conjunto is the exact song they're singing, but they're just doing it on their style? And then Norteños goes, I don't like Tejano because that's not traditional. What, they're doing the same corridos and rancheras that you're singing. So why is that? How is that not traditional? It's just a style of playing. So all in all, that's why I go back to and tell people that are traditionalists. I'm like, you see all that, the differences. You know, of course, they got a little difference, but to me, it's all one and the same. We're all singing the same songs. We're all either getting happy and drinking because it's the same drinking song. Either it could be a happy drinking song or a sad drinking song. Same one. Same polka. You know, what's the difference? I'm like, you just have a different style of playing it. What would happen if I would play those same rancheras and corridos in a honky-tonk rhythm? You know, what would be the difference then? What about if I... Because some of them have sang some of the Spanish songs, like, with the jazz behind it. You know, what's the difference between there? Is that not considered... Like, and these are the Tejano groups that are doing so, like, for somebody to say, oh, they're Tejano, like Little Joe y La Familia, they had the big band sound. He's like one of the well-known. Well, he was singing English, but they called him a Tejano. They're like, oh, that's Tejano music. But yeah, but he's singing English. Like, he's singing all like doo-wop stuff. That's not Tejano, it's doo-wop. But they still consider him Tejano. So I'm like, why put labels on stuff? It's your people. It's the same people, same music, same instruments. You know, everybody's playing it different, but they're playing the same songs. So why bother with it? Like, I hate getting into like the conversations because and I've done that to a couple friends where I'll have an old Flaco Jimenez record and I'll play it for them. And when he was younger, he was playing very, very fast. He was very fast. But when he got older, like in his, I guess in his 30s, and I mean, this was still like in his 60s, 70s, he was playing like Los Alegres de Terán. And everybody that's a Norteño knows who Alegres de Terán are. They're considered the godfathers of Norteño, and they have a distinct way of playing. Well, what a lot of people don't know is that Flaco was his idols. So he would record just like them. So I would put a, you know, cassette tape or CD, and I let it play. And I have my friends that to them, they're only Norteño. They don't like Tejano, they don't like Conjunto, they don't like anything else but Norteño. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm like, you like Flaco? Nah, he's Tejano. Okay, so I would put it on. And he goes, man, that's what I'm talking about. That's Norteño. That's what I'm like, that's Flaco Jimenez. And they'd be like, what? I'm like, that's Flaco Jimenez. Nah, I can't be. I'm like, that's Flaco Jimenez. He's playing just exactly like what you consider Norteño. I'm like, but now that you heard him, do you still consider him Tejano? I'm like, you yourself said it, that was Norteño music, by listening to it. So I'm like, do you consider him a Tejano or a Norteño now? And they can't tell me. They can't give me an answer. I'm like, exactly. So stop giving me labels and stuff. You know, as we're all playing the same music. You know, enjoy that everybody plays it different. That's what makes it great. I would be bored if every single band I've ever seen plays the exact same way, playing the exact same songs. I would be bored with it. I wouldn't want to listen to it. So it's great that you have the mixture of what people consider Conjunto Tejano Norteño. You know, I mean, I didn't grow up with banda. I'll listen to it here and there, but it's just not my cup of tea. You know, I like big band sound, but I don't like listening all the time. You know, so banda music doesn't bother me. They're still doing corridos and rancheras, but they're doing it to their style. They're like their stories, because of course, here in South Texas and North Mexico, the border towns, there's all these stories of what happens here. Well, all they're doing in banda music is bringing the stories from the West Coast and bringing them to us. So they're telling us what happens over there, because over there, I have friends that live on the West Coast. They're like, oh, I like Tejano and Tex-Mex and Conjunto and Norteño, but all the stories are from here. So even in songs, you'll hear small towns, you know, like Corpus Christi. You'll hear about like San Antonio, they call it San Anto. You'll hear about the border towns, Matamoros, Tamaulipas, you know, Tamaulipas, Nuevo León, like the country, like the, I'm sorry, the states over there. And they're listening to it in the West Coast, but I'm like, I don't know where those places are at. Well, it's the same thing with them. They're singing their songs. We don't know where some of them, they're talking about like Sinaloa. Sinaloa's on the West Coast, and you know, they're talking about that, and like, you know, the they got a, you know, we still have like Juarez, which is right there on the border of Texas and stuff. So that's in the middle. So they talk about Juarez too and all that stuff. But you know, it's all one and the same. It's one and the same. So it's there's people that will always say no, there's a difference between them. But to me, everything's the same. It's all the same to me, because it's the same music. You know, you're not really changing it. You're still singing Spanish. Still singing. Like I said, same song, same podcast. Nothing's really changed for me. Like, of course, they some people have taken out the accordion, put synthesizers, fine. There's people that have taken away the bajo sexto and have played guitar. They're still doing the melodies the same way. It's just that they're playing on guitar. It sounds different, but it's still the same. That's for me. I don't really see a difference between that when that comes around.
Tell me about performing with some of the pioneers of Conjunto music that you've mentioned. Or ones you haven't mentioned.
That has been a trip. I have been able, luckily, to perform with some of the pioneers. And some of the pioneers I've just been able to hang out with. Of course, Hometown Boys had their own style. And they were the first Mexican-American group to ever be inducted into the West Texas Hall of Fame with Buddy Holly. So they, like, in their own right, they had, like, a unique sound, and they created their own sound. Like, you know, they were, and here comes, some people called them Conjunto, others called them Tejano, but it was just their version of it. And, of course, those guys taught me what it was to be a musician, alongside with my teacher, who was part of Roberto Pulido Los Clásicos. Now, Roberto Pulido Los Clásicos, they were considered pioneers of the big Tejano band era, because they were one of the first groups to incorporate saxophone with accordion and have like the drums. And instead of bajo sexto, they would just use guitar, but no synthesizers. So they still had the ranchero sound, but with big, not quite a big band, but somewhat of a big band, because they would have horns. So they were pioneers of that. So I got to like hang out with them, and of course, my teacher, you know, being part of their group, they told me about how they started, about how at the beginning, you know, nobody really wanted to hire them because they were a new band, you know, new sound that nobody. But then little by little, people started listening to them. Oh, I like this new sound, so they started getting bigger and bigger. And then when you come across some of the pioneers that started like from like the 40s and 50s, because like Roberto Pulido, Hometown Boys, I'm talking about like this is the 70s and 80s and stuff where they were coming up. But some of the guys that were still around from like the 40s and 50s, like Flaco Jimenez, I've been able to sit down with Flaco, and half the time he doesn't remember who I am, or you know, I'm pretty sure he, you know, we partied together quite a number of times. But you know, being around him, he has so many stories that, you know, he talks about, like, yeah, I remember being, you know, playing in the dirt, you know, before there was amplification. Same thing with Augie Myers. Augie Myers was part of Texas Tornadoes, and so I got to play with Texas Tornadoes, opened up for him, and sat down with Augie, and he told me, I didn't even know this, but he told me that here in Houston, he used to come in Houston on Navigation, and he used to play all these rinky-dinky bars, and the bar owners would ask him, hey, would you have a gun? Do you have one? He goes, no. Why? He goes, and the bar owners would give him a gun. They're like, here, hold this, and just keep it with you while you're in here. And he said that there would be stabbings and shootings while they were playing. So the bar owners would be like, come in the back room. Cops would come in, clean it up. All right, get back on stage and start performing. So I'm like, wow, man, really? So, yeah, so they taught me about some of the olden days of how it was, like, performing. And, of course, now they're, like, living legends. But back then, it took me back to, like, okay, they did exactly what I'm doing now. They're paying their dues. They're running through rinky dinky bars. You know, having to you know, mess with people that don't want to pay them, and trying to figure out how to get paid, and you know, traveling. So all that stuff, like, they did exactly what I'm doing. So being able to listen to the stories and listening to them and tell me, like, yeah, back then we didn't make the amount of money we make now, like. Because they were the pioneers, you know, like Flacco and his dad and stuff. They would only play for private parties or for the community and stuff, but they wouldn't get paid. They still have to have jobs. And Flacco would tell me that his dad, you know, like, his dad had to work. You know, Narciso Martinez, who people many consider the father of Tejano music, he, late into his 80s, he was working at the Brownsville Zoo. And he's a pioneer, like, you know, everybody gives him credit, but, like, he had no money, you know, he's still poor. So, that kind of, like, coming from guys who actually lived it, it's a lot different than reading it from a textbook, but actually talking to somebody who lived it. And same thing, my teacher, he's considered a pioneer as well. He said he used to work in the cotton fields and picking cherries and strawberries and cotton and all that, all the way all up and down from South Texas to California. He said he traveled all over the place, and he said that the way to get out of it was through music. That was his only salvation. He goes, it was hard work, man. I was a little kid, you know, at the age of 5, working with my parents and stuff. And he told me that one day when they were poor, they didn't have much money. They were, you know, they were pickers, so they would go all up and down southwest of the United States and just pick whatever for work. He said his first time he ever performed, when he was 10 years old, and someone told him, hey, go play for this gentleman here. They gave him $10. Well, $10 back then, he said that he thought he won the lotto, because $10 in like the 40s, I mean, that was a lot of money back then, especially for him. And that's when he found out he could make more money doing music and provide for his family. I mean, it was hard. He told me, he even tried to convince me, my parents didn't want me to become a musician. They gave me music lessons because that's what I wanted. But when they started figuring out that I was going down the road of being a musician, they told my teacher, convince him not to. So my teacher sat me down, and he was very blunt. He told me, look, you want to be a musician? I'm going to tell you what I went through. And this is my personal experience. I was like, okay. I'm like, back when I was young, I used to drink. I used to smoke. But I never did drugs. He goes, that's an option that all musicians have. But it's up to you whether you're going to do it or not. By the time he came to me in the 60s, he was off smoking. He didn't drink, you know. But he said, when his younger days, he did. He goes, there's women all over. There's drugs all over. There's just temptation. You're on the road most of the year. You're gonna miss funerals. You're gonna miss anniversaries, weddings, birthday parties. It's gonna be a crappy life if you do this. He told me about the good and the bad. You know, he told me all that. Well, you know, you'll make some money. You'll get to travel if that's what you want. But you have to be prepared for what comes with everything. And I didn't understand that. until I started playing music and started actually traveling and touring, where I started having family members die. And I would just get a call, hey, you know, your aunt passed away or your cousin passed away. Well, shit, what am I going to do? I can't go back home. There's no way for me to go back. I didn't have money or plane tickets home, or who was going to take me home? I was halfway across the country. You know, I was in California. I was in Chicago. I was in New York when all this stuff happening. Oh, your cousin's getting married. Well, give him my blessings. I'm sorry I can't be there. You know, then I finally understood what he meant. And his sons, I never got to meet his sons, but he told me that his sons, all of them know how to play. Not one of them wanted to become a musician because of the lifestyle that they saw their dad go through. And I finally understood what he meant. So it's. I mean, I know it's tough, and I've dealt with it now. So now, after before he passed, my first tour, I told him how it was and how I slept in a few cars or people's houses, people's floors, you know, grass. He goes, well, can you deal with it? Or do you want to quit? I'm like, nah, I can deal with it. He goes, all right, then you'll be all right as a musician. And from then on, he just told my parents he's going to be a musician. There's nothing you can do about it. So, you know, having him that went through all that stuff on a personal level, and him being one of my mentors and telling me what it was like, I knew, like, it kind of like got me mentally prepared for everything that I was going to go through. Being able to meet Esteban Jordan, who, you know, another legend that passed away on us, but Esteban Jordan was one of those guys that was ahead of his time, that everybody considered him Tejano, but yet again, nobody wanted to go support him because he was just too out there. He was already playing jazz and Cuban music, salsa, and playing all these rock and roll riffs and everything on accordion. Like, he was considered the Jimi Hendrix of accordion. You have this living legend here, and this is when I was in Scarnales. We would go travel to San Antonio, and every Friday night, Steve Jordan, Esteban Jordan, that's El Parche, is what they called him, he would be playing at this very small venue, Salute. It's not there anymore. And I got to play at Salute. That was one of my goals, was to play at Salute, because Esteban Jordan and all the San Antonio legends would go there and play. The West Side Horns, you know, Flaco would be in there, you know, Nick Villarreal, all these guys. Well, I would go while we wouldn't play until like midnight from Scarnales, and I was down the street, and I would tell my buddies, hey, y'all want to go see a legend, man? Esteban Jordan? Nah, we're going to be here. I'm like, all right, I'll see y'all later. So I would go, and I'd pay $10 at the door. And I mean, I think the place is so small, you could only fit maybe like 12 people in there, max. I mean, it was tiny. But there would be Esteban Jordan on stage with his kids, two of his sons. And I remember one day, like the first time I saw him, you know, I went in there, I didn't get to talk to him. Second time I went, you know, I went in there just like normal and got to see him perform. And during one of his breaks, they left. They went outside, and I'm like, oh, I need to go get something from my... I think I had forgotten my phone or something. So I went outside, and I had a pickup truck at the time. And I went outside, and lo and behold, sitting on my tailgate was Esteban Jordan with his sons. And I'm not going to tell anything to Esteban Jordan. Like, what am I going to tell him? Like, hey, get off my truck? Like, he decided just to open up the tailgate and just sit down. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I opened the truck, and he goes, oh, I'm sorry, bro. I'm like, ah, it's all right, man. I came to see you, man. Like, you know, I play according to you. I'm playing down the street. I'm like, but I love you guys, man. And like, I've grown up with you guys. And, you know, and he was very, very particular with people. Like, he didn't like to take pictures. He didn't like to sign autographs. He was just very particular with people. He didn't like talking to people that much. He just had his circle. But for some reason that night, he started talking to me, and his sons were next to him, and I introduced me to everybody, and I'm like, yeah, how you doing, man? I'm Robert. You know, I'm from Houston. He goes, oh, Houston, man, I've had a lot of parties over there. And he just started telling everybody his stories, and I'm like, man, I can't believe I'm talking to Esteban Jordan like this, like one-on-one. And usually you only see him at the show, so like, you can't really talk to them. You could only say, hey, what's going on? Give me an autograph or shake my hand. No, but he was on my tailgate sitting down. And he I thought he had a cigarette in his hand, but it wasn't a cigarette, it was a joint. And he was like, he just started smoking. He goes, "Oh, I'm sorry. Hey, you want some?" And I mean, I'm not a weed smoker, but in that moment, I didn't think twice. I'm like, "Yeah, man, yeah." So here I am smoking weed with Esteban Jordan, El Parche. And we sat out there for about 10, 15 minutes just talking to him and his crew, telling me stories and stuff and asking me what I was doing. And I'm like, man, I'm trying to do what you do, but I can't. I'm like, you're just way out there for me, but I want to do what you do. I want to play all these types of music on my accordion. He goes, well, you know what, man? He goes, just do what I did. Tell everybody to fuck off and you just play your way. That's it. No matter what. I'm like, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. I'm like, man, I'm going to go back inside. Do you want a beer? He goes, yeah, man. He goes, you know what? Don't worry about it. Come on. So we go back inside. And this is before I knew who Asanet was, who was the owner of the bar. And, you know, a few years later, we became really close friends because I was performing there. But we walked back into the bar. And he goes, hey, Asanet, get this guy whatever he wants. It's on us. Oh, great. I'm like, man, really? He goes, yeah, man, have a beer on us. And he goes, have a seat. And he got up on stage. He goes, everybody, this is Houston over here. He didn't remember my name. He just remembered Houston. He goes, hey, Houston, what's up, man? I'm like, nothing, man. He goes, let me jam for you a little bit. And I was like maybe one of like six people in there. And I'm like, wow, dude, I'm having my own private concert. You know, after, like, I'm over here, and this is after, like, I'm, like, sitting down. I'm like, I just can't believe I smoked weed with Esteban Jordan. Like, I was thinking about it. I'm like, and he bought me a beer. How cool is that? And right in the middle of their set, I waited till they got done. And, you know, it's such a small place that you could hear everybody talking. So I'm like, Esteban, thank you so much for your hospitality. And I told, you know, bye to Asanet, who was the owner behind the bar. And I was like, I have to go play now. I have to go, you know. And he goes, all right, Houston, keep it up, brother. He goes, don't let nobody get you down, man. Just do what you do, man. And right then and there, he like kind of blanked out and just started playing. Like out of nowhere. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And, you know, people have told me the stories of Esteban Jordan, but, you know, he just like, he would just flip out and just like, you know. And then I would see him. I saw him a couple times after that, but of course he didn't remember me. But when I told him, hey, it's Houston, and he goes, oh, Houston, yeah, yeah, from Salute. So he remembered that. But there was a couple times I saw him, and I didn't want to bother him because there was too many people trying to get at him, trying to take pictures, and he would get so upset to take pictures and, like, to do autographs. He would hate that. I never asked him for a photograph, but I did ask him. I'm like, man, I hate to ask you this, but can you give me an autograph? Like, I don't mean to bother you like that. But, and this was before we went back into the bar. I actually had a CD case, a cover of him. And I had a cleaning cloth for the accordion. So I asked him, can you sign both of these for me? And he did. So I still have those. And that's like big memories that I have with him being, you know. And I was like, man, I was so grateful to have met him, have, you know, performed. And I got kicked out of Discovery Green with Flaco the last time we played together with Jake Tornadoes. We were in the green room and, you know, just chit-chatting about my teacher because he knew him very well. And, you know, we were just chit-chatting, and he was drunk. He didn't remember, and I was drunk too. This is after the shows, after everybody left, and it was only musicians in there. And he told his son, hey, go bring my accordion. I'm like, oh, great, he's going to perform. All right. Like, you know, I'm like, man, what are you going to play? He goes, play? I'm not playing. I'm like, well, why do you want your accordion? He goes, for the beer. I'm like, what? He goes, just wait, man. And so, like, his son brought his accordion in, took the accordion out. He goes, go put the accordion on the bus. And all the leftover beer that was inside the cooler, he just put it inside his accordion case. He goes, I'm going to go keep partying at in the room. If you want to come up. I'm like, man, I can't hang with you, man. This is like a, you know, 70-year-old man telling me And I'm like, I can't hang with this man. He's out drinking me. But before we left, we're making so much noise and laughing and just talking about, like, because Augie was there still, and Nudie, their singer, and we're talking, and Sean was there, and we were talking, and just, you know, they were telling me about the old days and just laughing and stuff. But me and Flacco were being very, very loud because we were just drunk. So the actual security guards are like, hey, y'all got to, they're like, are these the accordion players? And of course, everybody like, yeah, man, they're always the troublemakers. They're like, man, you got to get these accordion players out of here. They're making a lot of noise. Like, people were complaining. Like, well, the staff, like, you know, they're trying to close down the park. And me and Flacco, they're sitting down drinking and, like, not getting up. And everybody's trying to, get us out. And, when he told me to go up to keep partying, I'm like, man, I can't. I'm going home. He goes, all right, well, I'll see you when I see you. And he just went his separate way. So, like, being able to do that with Flacco and with Esteban Jordan was, who would ever think that? Like, you were going to be, you know, seeing your idols and doing what you're doing with them, like, in private. You know, in private, of course. And I never got to meet one of my other idols, Valerio Longoria. But I always wanted to meet him. I got to meet Mingo Salivar. I chatted with him a little bit. I got to, you know, and those guys, to me, those are some of the pioneers that I've grown up with. And especially, you know, with my teacher, I spent so much time with my teacher. He became like, I didn't consider him a legend in my eyes. Like, he was just my friend, you know. But being able to talk with all those guys and have all those stories that they told me from back in the day, that kind of like inspired me to start going doing more research on not just Mexican American music, but all sorts of music that I've been playing. So like that kind of got me into doing research of like roots music, like all roots music that I've tried doing, whether it be blues, rock and roll, country, or you know, Tex-Mex and all that, and even Zydeco. I've been slowly trying to teach myself all about the roots music and how it started, where it comes from, who were the pioneers of it, and like, you know, just because now that I'm doing so many genres, now I'm getting to meet some of the guys that are like, you know, that are up there that are considered legends and stuff like that. So, which is great. Which now I'm expanding not just with the pioneers of Mexican American music, but I'm expanding to, you know, being able to see other people from other genres. So that's been great. That's been awesome, awesome. But yeah, those are I think my stories that I still consider and hold dear to my heart. That some people don't even believe some of those stories that happened, but I tell them, I'm like, I don't care whether you believe them or not. They're my stories. That's what I went through, and I actually was there with them. So that was like my moment, that just my personal moment where nobody else was around. I didn't have to. Everybody was like, how come you didn't take pictures? I'm like, at that moment, you don't take pictures. You just live in the moment, and that's what I did. And I'm like, oh, man, this is awesome. This is awesome. Like, I can't ask for anything better. Like, I, you know, and years later, I ran into Esteban Jordan's sons, and they still remembered me. They still remember who I was, and we actually performed together at this place called Jovitas in Austin, which is no longer around either, but we got to perform together, and they were like, hey, man, you were the guy that went over there to visit my pops. I'm like, yeah, man, I would go there on Fridays when I would go play in town. They're like, oh, yeah, I remember you, man. And I was like, oh, that was so awesome for them to recognize me after so many years. So that was a treat.
Roberto, you've mentioned your teacher a number of times.
Oh, Leonel Pulido.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Leonel Pulido.
You may have mentioned it. I might have just missed it.
No, Leonel Pulido. I didn't say his name. Yeah, Leonel Pulido. He was the guy that started it all for me. Started it all, yeah. And then, of course, Ricky Martinez, who's, you know, Jesse Martinez and Roman Martinez, those are the guys from the Hometown Boys. Those are the guys that kind of like, without them and my teacher, I would not be doing what I'm doing right now. They're the ones who gave me everything that I needed to get mentally prepared and musically prepared to do that.
Mm-hmm. What would you say about playing music that we haven't already covered in this interview?
Playing just playing music that we haven't covered here, that I would tell people, go and enjoy that music. Like, if you could find it somewhere, go listen to it. because a lot of people, they haven't gotten to hear me play some ska and reggae, which I've done shows from before, but of course that was like in the early days of Scarnales. And then when I performed with Chutzen, well, opened up with Chutzen and Maytal, I got to do a lot of ska reggae. At times I was doing during the Scarnales years, we did a Ramones tribute and a Clash tribute, and every single song that I performed with them was with the accordion. So a lot of people don't know that I even did that, you know, because it's just so obscure that it just, I don't even think there's recordings of it or anything. And then when we performed, you know, when we did Ace of Spades with Umbrella Man, people freaked out. They were like, what are you doing? You're playing Ace of Spades on accordion. And people freaked out. And you know, we haven't played it in a couple of years now. And then we've done Pink Floyd as well. So, yeah, like, I want to try. I still think I'm like 20 something years old, even though I'm not. I'm 31, but I still feel I feel like a kid, because I still want to do so much with the accordion. I want to go out and experiment with just any music that I come across, like, because now that I get to travel because of music. When I go to different parts of the country, and like, I've been to Canada, Mexico, across the country, and across the pond. I was in Switzerland doing a country festival over there. But it gives me the opportunity of learning about music in that area. And that's what I want. I want to learn about music everywhere I go, because you never know what you might find. You might find someone doing probably the same thing you're trying to do, you know, on the other side of the country or on the other side of the world. And to me, that's like the biggest gift that I could get, is being able to just listen to all sorts of music, all sorts of genres. Because I'm the type of guy that I just want to go and go. I'll sit down. People, this is something that I've kept very personal, but every once in a while, I'll buy season tickets to the ballet. And people are like, you like the ballet? I'm like, the ballet, not so much. Not the dancing part. I could see the storyline, but I go for the music. I'll sit there and listen to the music, because there is a story that they're doing through dance. But to me, I imagine another story. Like, sometimes I'll close my eyes and listen to the music, because the music gives us, it gives you emotion. So I want to go listen to that emotion. See, I want to go hear the sadness and the happiness that they play for the ballet. And then, of course, going to the symphony, going to see the orchestras and stuff. Like, I really enjoy that, because you get, it's, that kind of gives you ideas of, oh man, like, what you want to do. Because now that I started writing songs, It hasn't been too long, but I've been writing songs for a while. But those are the ones that give me the inspiration and ideas, like, okay, how do I want the audience to feel? Do I want them to feel happy? Do I want them to feel sad? Do I want them to feel happy and sad in the same song? And, you know, some songs that I've written, because of my background, I have an English degree. Because of my background, I create stories. So a lot of people think, well, did that really happen? I'm like, no, I just created that. That's like my own imagination, and that's what I create. But, and then there's a lot of songs where I've been writing, where it's just stuff that happened to me on the road, or, you know, throughout life. So I'll start writing songs about that. But I tell people, it doesn't have to be reality. I make stuff up, you know, just to create the music, create the sound. Just like if you go see the ballet or the symphony, you're there to hear the emotions that the musicians are bringing out. So yeah, for me, like, any type of genre, like, go out and listen to it. It don't matter who you are, just go learn about it. You'll be so much enriched. You're like, your life will be better just by having that heard that before, because that'll stay in your head, and you'll see the world different. You'll see it way different, and that's what I love. I love doing that.
You described many important moments in your musical career. Which experience has had the biggest impact on you?
The biggest impact, well, of course, first and foremost, with Leonel Pulido. Without him, because he did sit, he was the only musician that ever sat me down and told me about the horror stories of what they have to go through. And no musician is going to tell you that, because, I mean, that's just their life. Like, everybody has their own horror stories that they have to go through. And, you know, I've met a lot of musicians that were divorced 3-4 times because of the music lifestyle. But Leonel was the first one to sit me down and tell me what I was in for. So that was one of the biggest moments where I had to decide, okay, do I want to do this for a living or not? Because he told me, he goes, you have to choose. I'm like, I'm not going to choose for you, and I'm not going to tell you not to do it, but you're going to have to find out for yourself. If this is what you're going to do, be prepared for the consequences, whether it be good or bad. That's what he told me, and that was what made my decision, because at the time, I was still young, still under him, teaching under him, learning under him. I was still in high school, and I was playing baseball, and I made my varsity team, and, you know, when I was a freshman, so I was pretty good at it. When I decided to give that up, because that was my other big dream, is like, I wanted to play in the big leagues, of course, you know, playing ball. But the other thing is, my coach was trying to figure out if we could find a scholarship for me so I could play ball in the college level. Because he said I was good enough to do it, you know, it's just more hard work, and I could have done it. But I started thinking about, like, well, do I want to waste my years playing ball, having the dream of, you know, playing baseball on the college level and hopefully going to AAA at the major leagues, you know? Or do music was always my first passion. So I was like, well, if I do music, I'm going to have a, you know, who knows what type of lifestyle I'm going to have, because that was the other thing. I didn't know if I was going to make any money out of it. And, you know, I still don't make much. Like, I make enough to kind of live off on. But that was a choice I made. But Leonel was like a big, he helped me in my decision of making that. Because at one point, he even told me, he goes, if you just become a musician and just play, like, only like as a local musician, will you be bothered by it? I'm like, no, as long as I'm playing music, I don't care. Like, I don't have to make money. I just want to play. Of course, I have to find a way to survive, so I try everything I can to make ends meet. But, you know, of course, a big dream is to make enough money where I don't have to worry about it. But right now, it's still, you know, you got the starving. I got the starving artist syndrome. But yeah, he was a big decision, and the other guys that helped me out too were the Hometown Boys, because they're the ones who kind of gave me the confidence after putting me on stage and putting me in the line of fire. They gave me the confidence to be like, I could do this. No matter who I join or who I'm with, I could do this. So them two were the most important, you know, group of people in my life to get that. And especially them through the music side. And without my parents, my dad, Roberto, he's junior. Roberto Rodriguez Jr., I'm the third. And my mom, Maria, without their support, they have been the greatest parents I could ever ask for. My dad, of course, when I was playing Little League, I couldn't. He didn't have much time to come to my games, which I was sad about, because all my other friends' dads were around. Like, my mom would come every once in a while, but even her, she, you know, she couldn't come all the time. And then my mom didn't drive, so we would have to take the bus, or I'd have to walk to the games. And my dad was always working, so. It wasn't until when I became a musician, my dad, we found a mutual place of where me and him could hang out together. So now, even to this day, my dad comes to my shows. He'll drive me. He wants to drive me. He wants to come with me and hang out with me. And I find that to be like the biggest support that I have, is my parents backing me up. They once they once I said, this is what I'm doing, I went to school for my parents. I got my degree, and my mom wanted me to do that because that's, like, out of the entire family, I'm the first one to have a college degree. So she wanted me to have something to fall back on. But I'm like, my mom think I'm going to go over to get another record job. I'm like, I think I'm going to do this for a living. And she let me do it. So I'm very proud of having them support me as much as they've done. And like I said, those people, those have been the most important people that are in my moments of need. That's what I, those are the guys that guided me to doing what I do. And without them, I don't know where I would be at all.
Well, we made it through all of my questions.
Okay.
Is there something I should have asked you that I didn't ask you, or is there something you'd like to add?
No, not really. I'm pretty sure we covered everything else. I mean, like, we went over all the Mexican stuff that I grew up with, and some of my times with the musicians. What else has it been there? Just like anybody else is like, well, as far as the traveling part, you know, traveling has been a big thing in my life. Where, you know, growing up didn't have much money. The only place we would travel to was Mexico because we would go visit family. And I used to hate that when I was a kid because I was like, why can't we go to California? Why can't we go to New York? But we didn't have money for it, and my parents never, you know, to them they didn't know anybody. I'm like, well, yeah, we could, but we didn't have money for a hotel room. So I was like, man, and that was that by doing that, I'm like, well, growing up as a little kid, I was always imagining, like, what is going to take me around the world? What is going to, like, how am I going to do that but without me having to pay for it? So, of course, music was always there. But then when I was playing baseball, I'm like, well, maybe baseball might take me. I might be a star. But when I got older and finally decided to do music, I'm like, music's going to take me. And it has. It's taken me around different places where I haven't had to pay a dime to go to and got paid for it. So that has been my biggest, one of my other gifts is that I get to travel the world and see so many, meet different people, meet, like, go to new places without having to pay for it because I'm playing music. And I get the itch sometimes where if I'm here in Houston for a while, for a couple months, it doesn't matter if I leave for a weekend, a week, a month, 2 months, but I have to get out of the city just because it's just so much chaos. Like, it's just always chaos in the city. So sometimes I want to go to another city with different chaos, but it's different so I can handle it. Or sometimes I like to go out to the country and just drive. Just drive. So, like, I'll do that. And then, like, this summer, none of my normal contacts from out of state have called me to do shows. So I'm like, man, what am I going to do with myself? Like, because last summer I was in Canada for 2 months. This summer I've been stuck here in Houston. But Houston, I don't think I'll ever move out of Houston. Houston has been my home. I was born and raised in this city. And there's so much to look for in this city. And that's another thing, is that there's so much history, so much music, so much culture, just in the city alone, that I don't want to live anywhere else. Houston has always been my heart and soul. That's like, that's another thing that makes me, is Houston. And there's so many places here that I love to go to. There's places I've never been to in Houston that I want to go try and visit. I think one of my next goals, I told one of my buddies that we got to save enough money so we can go bar hopping to bars that we've never been to. And it doesn't matter how expensive they are, we at least got to try them once. So that goes hand in hand with my music. My music thing, I just want to travel and go meet people. That's what I want to do, that for as long as I can, you know, however long I have. I want to just keep doing that. It's just traveling. No matter whether it's within the city or outside the city, I just want to go visit people. I want to go see how other people live, how, what other music, like, what sparks their intrigue, you know, what music do they listen to? Like, do they listen to other music? You know, what if I show them my music? Like, that's what I think about all the time. Is like, I want to go find out what other people are doing. That's what I want to do. Because it's fun. It's fun in meeting people and, you know, meeting new different cultures, learning about different cultures. I love, you know, I packed on a few pounds ever since I became a musician because I just like to eat. I like to eat different foods that they give me. And, you know, eating, you know, Indian food, Pakistani food, you know, there's like just all sorts of, like, Chinese food and all that. But, like, you get some of the, like, sushi and Japanese food. Like, all sorts of food. And then, especially if it's homemade, I love it. I love it. It don't matter, like, if somebody, like, I want to taste it. I want to see what other people eat around the world, you know? So that's, like, and all that revolves around music for me. So, like, music is, like, it's there. Like, I can't get rid of it. Music takes me places, lets me eat the different places, you know, lets me meet different people. And then it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And that's what I enjoy about life, is that music is all around. And I get to enjoy everything that comes with it. So, you know, whether it be good or bad, I just enjoy it. I have no regrets. Up until now, I have no regrets. And I don't think I ever have any regrets. The decisions I've made, on my personal level, it's, you know, of course, my ex-girlfriend left because of the music lifestyle. I haven't really had any serious relationships here and there. Just kind of little, I guess, flings here and there. But the music lifestyle is too much for me. So, people would tell me when I'm going to settle down. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, whenever I find that woman that'll put up with all my crap that I have to, you know, that they got to deal with, you know. But up until now, I'm just enjoying the ride. That's what I'm doing, is just enjoying the ride. And, you know, hopefully I'll continue. I want to continue starting, you know, adding more stories to my life, to more chapters, to see what else I could kind of come up with.
Well, thank you, Roberto, for your time and sharing your expertise and knowledge. And this concludes the interview with Roberto Rodriguez.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.